Well, welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. First, though, I have to say this is a very special edition of Archaeo News Podcast. It is our 100th edition. So, to start with, let's just have a message from Diego of Stone Pages.
Buongiorno. This is Diego Meozzi from the Stone Pages, and I'd like to tell you a few details on the Archaeo News Podcast. It's been 10 years since Paola and I we started our free Archaeo News service devoted to anyone interested in prehistory and megalithic sites. At that time, the web was still in its infancy and our online newsletter was something really new and exciting. Then, of course, the technology advanced, and back in 2005, we joined forces with David Connolly from Badger to improve our newsletter, making it something even more interesting and entertaining. The first Archaeo News Podcast MP3 file was put online in June of 2005. And 3 years later, we are serving our podcasts to almost 16,000 people each month. Our podcast feed file is being read 73,000 times per month, while the main news feed file reaches almost 114,000 downloads per month. Okay, it's enough with numbers. Now, the podcast you are listening to is our 100th issue, and I'd like to take the chance to thank all our readers and listeners. Thank you for your great support and encouragement that allowed us to go on with this no-profit project. As you probably know, we've got no sponsors, we've got no ads, but your appreciation and your positive feedback for what we are doing is probably the best reward we can imagine. Last but not least, a big thank you to our great speaker, David Connolly, and our master wizard, Dave Horrocks. The Archaeo News Podcast wouldn't exist without them. Ciao, and keep listening to the Stone Pages podcasts.
Now, to add to Diego's sentiments, I can't really believe that it's been 3 years and 100 podcasts. I've been doing some sums myself, and it adds up to a massive 30-plus hours of broadcasting. So if you fancy listening to the whole set, just settle down with not just one cup of coffee, but a whole pot, I'd say. It's become one of the joys of my life, in fact, when I can settle down and prepare the news for broadcast every weekend. And my greatest fear, I have to confess, is the mispronunciations. I've heard it is actually one of my trademarks. So as I travel around the world doing the podcast from China to Norway, Bolivia to Alaska, I've been helped by many people from various countries who coach me through some of the more difficult words. It's amazing just how much you can learn. And the learning and the fun is what keeps me going. That and the knowledge that we're not just speaking to empty space, but to thousands of listeners around the world. It's quite a feeling, quite a responsibility. And my thanks for being allowed to get involved in this goes to Diego and Paola's Stone Pages. I just can't say thank you enough. And also to Dave Horrocks for making it all sound so professional. And of course to you all. So, before I make a complete fool of myself, thank you for making this podcast a regular feature for all of us. So I will now return to our normal service, and let's begin the 100th edition of Archaeology News Weekly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A probable chambered cairn is unearthed in Orkney. Carnwyn Coit in Cornwall is to be saved by a local trust. And Norwegian ancient sites are being destroyed by development. And to continue the news of destruction, we report that English monuments are under increasing threat themselves. Megalithic remains are unearthed in Malta, and 3,000-year-old ruins are found in Bolivia. Early Australian tattoos are found to match rock art. And finally, the grim news that experts have 6 months to save Lascaux cave art. As the two-week excavation of Outer Green Hill in South Wales, Orkney in Scotland recently drew to a close, excavation supervisor Dan Lee from the Orkney Research Centre of Archaeology explained that Outer Green Hill was interesting as it did not display the geophysical responses typical of a broch, which was what was expected, with large outer ditches associated with settlement and circular internal walls. The geophysics results instead suggested a squared internal structure, which was indicative of either a Neolithic tomb or even a Norse stronghold, as the area is mentioned in the sagas. The aim of the dig was to characterise and date the site. A trench excavated from the top of the mound down the southern side revealed two internal corbelled wall faces just over 1 metre apart. Appear to form an internal passage orientated east to west, and formed perhaps the central passage of a Neolithic chambered tomb. Corbelled internal walls, where the walls gradually taper inwards towards the roof, are more typical of Maze Howe-type tombs. Water-worn beach slabs have been used in the internal wall faces, in just the same way as at the Coyness chambered tomb in Sandy. The loose upper backfill of the passage contains several pieces of pottery dating to the Neolithic, although this awaits specialist confirmation. The structure of the external mound to the south consists of a solid wall-like core with an external revetment wall that slopes inwards and which survives to over 1 metre in height. Dan said that it's still possible that the passage represents an internal feature within the wall of a broch rather than that of a central passage of a Neolithic tomb. However, the pottery and character of the masonry point to this early Neolithic date. Well, either way, we can say that that is a star find. The Sustainable Trust is now about to buy Carwinnan Coit near Camborne, West Cornwall in England. The Trust is buying about 5 acres of land around the site, English Heritage Scheduled Monument number 396. It's also known as the Pendarvis Coit or the Giant's Frying Pan. The monument is in a collapsed condition and lies by the ancient trackway which can still be followed from the Copperhill Moors to the sea at Gwythyn. It fell down in the 19th century and was re-erected soon afterwards. It fell down again in the 1960s. It is hoped, with the help of English Heritage, the Cornwall Archaeology Unit and the Heritage Environment Service, to rebuild the coit back to its former glory. The project will be of major significance to the regeneration of the Camborne area and the protection of Cornish traditions and culture. The Sustainable Trust is sourcing grants and advice, and if you're able to help, please contact the Trust. More information about the monument can be found at savependarviscoit.weebly.com. I'll spell that out. That's savependarviscoit, SAVEPENDARVISQUOIT.weebly.com. Yes, Weebly, I jest you not, that's exactly what it says. Burial mounds, rock carvings, ancient dwellings and other cultural heritage sites are increasingly being destroyed in Norway by new roads, agriculture and building sites. The number of criminal investigations connected with the laws protecting Norway's archaeological heritage is at an all-time high. Not all the losses are the result of criminal activity, though. Dispensations for the rules and natural erosion are also taking their toll. Usually by the time that specialists are called in, the damage has been done. Perry Rolfson at the Cultural History Museum in Oslo said they are sometimes able to save what remains, but can't fix what's already been destroyed. The fines, he feels, are too lenient and prison sentences are hardly ever given. Surveys carried out by the authorities show that cultural heritage sites are under increasing pressure. Both private and public construction projects ignore buried archaeological artefacts to avoid any hold-ups and extra costs. Some gamble on not being caught, while others pretend that they were unaware of what lay in their way. Much of what is lost is through ignorance, or shall we say misunderstanding. However, owners and local authorities have been fined for breaking the antiquity laws on purpose. This is an all too common and sad story where a balance must be achieved between protecting the past and providing for the future. To continue on this theme, experts at English Heritage have just compiled a risk register which pinpoints England's historic treasures that are most in need of urgent attention to save them for the future. Heritage at Risk is an alarming read indeed. Of the 70,000 protected sites assessed so far, one in five scheduled monuments, from burial mounds to castles and abbeys, is at high risk. Across Cambridgeshire alone, there are 308 scheduled ancient monuments, of which 263 are known to be at risk. Although protected by law, scheduled monuments are threatened by a wide range of human activities and natural processes. The new study has revealed also that almost 20% of historic monuments in the east of England are currently at risk, including the late Neolithic Harpley burial mound in northwest Norfolk, which has suffered terrible damage from motocross riders. The owners have now put up signs banning motocross riding and have reseeded to try and provide a healthy grass cover. Regional Director for English Heritage in the East of England, Greg Lutton, said they were particularly anxious about the condition of scheduled ancient monuments, as when they are damaged or lost, such sites, often dating back thousands of years, can never be replaced. English Heritage believe that no monument which is legally protected in the public interest should be at risk, let alone one in five. Part of the problem lies in government funding levels. English Heritage's finances have been so constrained that it is now only distributing about £4.4 million, while compared to a decade ago, it was actually giving out £6.6 million. Scheduled ancient monuments, for the most part, are not moneymakers and never will be. Cash has to be spent with no prospect of return. So once again, we have to decide what's important for us, to find the balance that suits the majority. An archaeological discovery described as the most important in 18 years has been made at the site of Taxian temples in Malta. Malta Environment Planning Authority officials discovered megaliths and other remains during development works within the buffer zone of the Neolithic temples complex. The site was described by archaeologist Kevin Borda as the most important one since the burial ground was found at the Brockdorf Circle in 1990. The site lies within a small area of land measuring only 25 metres by 8 towards the back of a large development plot. The megaliths and boulders were found together with pottery with incised motifs which date them back to the temple period. The discovery was made during a routine inspection by the Heritage Planning Unit, and it was noted that demolition and site clearance works had uncovered a number of features dating back to 4,100 to 2,500 BCE. The superintendents of cultural heritage are now collaborating to investigate the features and ensure their preservation. Archaeologists have begun digging at an ancient ceremonial site in eastern Bolivia to piece together the rites and daily life of cultures dating back as far as 3,000 years ago. Locals stumbled upon the remains while clearing the ground to build a new market in the town of Copacabana, a tourist hotspot on the shores of Lake Titicaca. Some relics go back as far as 3,000 years, when a little-known religious tradition called the Yayamama is thought to have flourished in the Andes. The culture carved sculptures in stone with a man on one side and a woman on the other. The sculptures, which also feature two-headed snakes and geometric shapes, are still revered by local indigenous groups. The Yayamama built a series of small temples by the lake, each 2 hours by foot from the other. The local archaeologists say that to understand the present and plan for the future, they have to look to the past. But the archaeologists also said that not everyone in Copacabana near the border with Peru is as excited about the past as they are. Locals are determined to finish the construction of the market that they started in June. And the archaeologists feel that they are being rushed and have had to work really hard to show the architecture and other remains so that people can realise that they have huge cultural value and see that they are part of their own identity and past. A new study reports that elaborate and distinctive designs on the skin of Indigenous Australians match characters and motifs found on rock arts and portable objects, ranging from toys to pipes. The study not only illustrates the link between body art such as tattoos and scarring with cultural identity, but it also suggests that study of this imagery may help to unravel mysteries about where certain groups travelled in the past, what their values and rituals were, and how they related to other cultures. Liam Brady of Monash University's Centre for Australian Indigenous Studies commented that distinctive design conventions can be considered markers of social interaction and are a cultural signature that archaeologists can use to understand ways that people were relating to each other in the past. For the study published in the latest issue of the journal Antiquity, Brady documented rock art drawings, images found on early turtle shells, stone and wooden objects such as bamboo tobacco pipes and drums, and images that were etched onto the human body through a process called scarification. Brady focused his attention on a region called the Torres Strait, a collection of islands in tropical northeastern Queensland. The islands lie between Australia and the Melanesian island of New Guinea. People were living in the Torres Straits as early as 9,000 years ago, when sea levels were much lower and a land bridge connected Australia with New Guinea. Brady determined that within the body art, rock art and objects, four primary motifs often repeated themselves: a fish headdress, a snake, a four-pointed star and a triangle variant. Analysis of the materials found that the two basic groups, horticulturalists and hunter-gatherers, inhabited the Torres Straits during early history. Aboriginal people at Cape York, however, a peninsula close to Australia, had a very different artistic system in operation, which did not incorporate many of the designs from Papua New Guinea. Based on land locations where the body art and object imagery was found, as well as the nature of the designs, Brady concludes that Cape York residents were hunter-gatherers, while groups in the more northerly locations within the Torres Strait appear to have been horticulturalists. Since imagery mixed and matched more among early farmers, Brady concludes they enjoyed kinship links and engaged in extensive trade with Papua New Guinean groups. In the future, similar studies could help to identify cultural groups in other regions, while also revealing their social interactions. Experts believe that up to half of the prehistoric art in the Lascaux Caves in France is at risk. You can read about this in more detail in issue 1 of the Past Horizons magazine. More details on that at the end of this program. Efforts to combat a fungal invasion have been unsuccessful. Meanwhile, UNESCO, the world cultural body, has threatened to humiliate France by placing the Lascaux Caves, known as the Sistine Chapel of Prehistory, on its list of endangered sites of universal importance. The UNESCO World Heritage Committee has given the French government 6 months to report on the success of its efforts to save the Lascaux cave paintings in Dordogne from an ugly and potentially destructive invasion of grey and black fungi. At the same time, a scientific committee appointed by the French government has conceded that an elaborate treatment with a new fungicide in January has failed to stop the mould advancing through more parts of the cave. An independent pressure group of scientists and historians claims up to half of the startlingly beautiful 17,000-year-old images of bison, horses, wild cattle and ibex are now threatened by the fungal invasion, the second of its kind in 8 years. Officials from the French government's Department of Historic Monuments and experts from all over the world have been quarrelling for years now over the best way to preserve the Lascaux paintings. Some experts have accused the French authorities of a series of blunders, including a change in the air conditioning system in 2000, the use of high-powered lights in the cave, and allowing far too many, what they say, special visits. An independent body, the International Committee for the Protection of Lascaux, infuriated Paris by asking UNESCO to intervene last September. The French authorities initially denied that the Lascaux paintings themselves had been attacked by the second fungal invasion. They later admitted to some blotching on the paintings, but no lasting damage. The Independent Protection Committee, citing information from experts who have visited the caves, insisted that some of the images have been irreparably blurred or that their colours have now faded. Recently, the French authorities admitted a further setback. A treatment with fungicide in January appears to have been successful, but then the black and grey blotches began spreading again across paintings. Marie-Anne Sear, the head curator of Lascaux, said that the news was disappointing, but progress was being made. Well, let's hope the next news report shows more than just progress being made, as now is not the time to become defensive when dealing with such an internationally important site. As I said, you can actually read more about the Lascaux Cave paintings in issue 1 of the Past Horizons magazine, which you can find at www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. We're also glad to announce that as you listen to this, the latest edition, issue 3, is now available online at the same address. Can I also remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as the UK Heritage Calendar, Library and Guidance section, can be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. And, as ever, more can be found at the fabulous Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. So, just before we end this edition, this 100th edition, I'd like to say thank you again to Diego, Paolo, Dave Horrocks, and why not myself, and of course all of you. Thanks very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you return again to us next week for the just equally exciting edition 101.